of the Torah is a story that can really be told as a story of coming together and coming apart. They're the stories, if we just go back to one of the earliest stories in the Torah, if we think back to Cain and Hevel, those two brothers united by blood, and so quickly, the story really falls apart, dissolves. There's the anger, there's the envy, there's the jealousy. And these two brothers that were united, ultimately we know that Cain kills Hevel. And they're just the first in a series of brothers. There's the story of Yitzchak and Yishmael, the story of Yaakov and Esav, the story of Yosef and his many brothers, that we have the, we're just leaving the book of Bereishit behind now and turning to Shemot. And really, the book of Bereishit is just one story after another of these families that should have been united and bound together. And what we see is these families are coming apart. And even if we go beyond the stories of the brothers, we also see that narrative in terms of the story of the Jewish people. Early on in the Torah, we have Migdal Bavel, the Tower of Babel, where the people all unite together, they come together, and then it's actually God, God's self, that disperses them and separates them, a story of coming together and coming apart. Or if you think forward in the Torah to Bamidbar, to the book of Numbers, you'll remember the story of Korach and his band of rebels that challenged Moshe's authority. And once again, you have a people that should have been united, and there is this huge rift, this divide that forms between them. And as a result, Korach and many of his people are swallowed up by the earth. That we could just tell, we could trace a narrative through the Torah of unity and disunity, of coming together and coming apart. But really, if we want to think about this idea of unity and disunity, it goes back before even human beings enter the scene, before Cain and Abel, before all the brothers, before the Jewish people. It actually goes back to the story of creation. There was this moment before God took to making order and making separations, where all of the water of the world was one. All the waters were united and together. And then God started separating them. So we read in Bereishit, "Vayomer Elokim yehi rakia betoch hamayim." God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the water." "Vayhi mavdil ben mayim lemayim." And God separated the water from water. This water that was all one becomes separated. "Vayasa Elokim et rakia." God made the expanse, ve'yavdel ben hamayim asher mitach l'rakia u'ben hamayim asher me'al l'rakia, v'yichen. God separates it, and he separates the, there's the water that is above the expanse and the water that is below the expanse, and thus it was so. Ve'yikra Elokim l'rakia shamayim, God calls the expanse heavens, v'yihi erev, v'yivoker yom shini. It was evening, it was morning, the second day. So there's a modern commentary called the Ma'anat Shel Torah. And the Ma'anat Shel Torah notices something about this description of the second day, of the separations of the waters, the creation of the rakia of the expanse. The Ma'anat Shel Torah notices that about this, the Torah doesn't say, Vayar Elohim Kitov. God doesn't see this as good. There's many other, it's a phrase that we're familiar with, Vayar Elohim Kitov. God saw that it was good. A lot of the work of creation is God's doing it. God does the work and is like, this is good. This is good work. But the work of separating the waters, God doesn't see this and think good. And so the Ma'anat Shel Torah asks the question and says, what's going on? What's going on with the work of the waters? And he answers, he says, because this is the moment when separation, when machloket is introduced into the world. When God divides water from water, it's the very first machloket. It's the very first separation, the very first division. I feel like there is something so beautiful and painful about this, that there was this moment sort of before it all really began where there was no division. There was only water that was all together. And yet it seems as a necessary part of creation for there to be rakia, for there to be heavens, for there to be the land, for there to be the adama that we are grounded on, God had to introduce machloket. God had to introduce separation into the world. That separation is both necessary and also what a loss to lose the water that was once together. So the Ma'anat Shel Torah says about this, Maim u'maim, shehem mahut echad, water and water, that this is really one substance, it's one essence. Ve'im etzlam yesh pirud vehevdel, ein ze siman tov. If among a thing that was supposed to be one, that's really one thing, there's separation and there's division, it's not a siman tov. It's not a good thing. It's not a good sign. This is where I want to start our thinking and our learning today. That on the one hand, that separation and that division was a necessary part of creating in the world. The world could not exist without that machloket, without that pirud, without that division. And also, there's a loss just in the opening lines of Reshit. There's something very painful about that. Before we really get into thinking about division, I really want to start from a place of unity. I want to start with the word we're going to be saying a lot tonight is achdut, is unity. I want to start from that place of achunity. So if we go back to the story of Jacob and Esav, one in the series of brothers that we saw should have been together, and yet there's this painful coming apart. If we go back to that story, there's a midrash that talks about that moment when Jacob is reuniting with Esav. So you remember the story that Jacob, through some sort of trickery, takes a birthright. Esav is obviously very upset about it. Jacob flees. Eventually, Jacob and Esav reunite. There's obviously a lot of trepidation, a lot of anxiety, presumably on the part of Jacob, to be how is this reunion gonna go? Jacob is approaching Esav, and the Torah tells us that Jacob, in preparation for this reunion, he groups his family into smaller groups, right? There's Rachel and her kids. There's Leah and her kids. There's the maidservants and their kids. That he makes these groups, and then he goes ahead of the groups. So there's a midrash, and this is what the midrash teaches. So the midrash says, Tani kinuso v'kinus banav. It's taught that he gathered together his children. Hitzilu miyad Esav. This gathering together of his children, this is what saved Jacob from the hand of Esav. Kinuso v'kinus banav, the act of gathering together his children, hakoach shayu meuchadim yachad, the strength that they were united together, ze hitzilet Yaakov kasher shav le'eretz Yisrael im hashivtei Hashem, im shivtei Yah. This, the fact that they were all united together, this is what saved Jacob from Esav and all of his officers when he came back with all the tribes. Shehem kulam histaklu me'eretz Yisrael. Because in the end of the story, Esav and all of his people, they end up leaving the land. Ve'yahu v'nav nisharu be'eretz Yisrael. But Jacob and his children, they stay in the land of Israel. That the Midrash wants to make a claim that when the Torah tells us that in preparation for reuniting with Esav, Jacob does this act of grouping his family, the Midrash wants to say these gatherings together, this is the thing that saved Jacob from Esav. The coming together in these small groups created a power, and that was the saving force. So the Midrash, I don't know that you have this in front of you, but the Midrash is, it bases itself on this verse from Isaiah. Okay, so the context in Isaiah is we are getting reprimanded by God for turning to idols. And in Isaiah, there is a pasuk, a verse that says, "Bezaakech yatziluch kibbutzaich." In Isaiah, this is read as, when you cry out, will the things that you gathered around you, meaning your idols, rhetorically, will they save you? In the context in Isaiah, this is God reprimanding us and saying, those things you gathered around you, your kibbutzayich, those empty idols, these are not going to save you when you're crying out to me. This midrash that we just learned is going to take that verse and turn it on its head and read it in a totally different way. So the midrash reads it as, bizaakech, when you cry out, kibbutzayich, your gatherings, gathering people around you, affirmatively, this will save you. The Midrash takes this verse, and in the context in Isaiah is a sort of a reprimand of the things you gather together, these idols, these are not going to be the thing that saves you. And it says, no, the things you gather are about people. When you gather people around you, when you come together with people, when you cry out, this is going to be the thing that saves you. Which is to say, what saved Jacob from Esav was this koach, the strength that he gains in coming together. The Netivot Shalom is a 20th century Hasidic thinker, Rabbi Shalom Noach Berezovsky, and he, on this parsha, he takes this midrash from Bereishit Rabbah that really talks about the thing that saved Jacob from Esav is coming, gathering together his family and the strength, and he brings it to really make a greater claim about Achdut, a greater claim about the power of unity. And I would say that the Netivot Shalom, Rabbi Berezovsky, he really traces a narrative through the Torah of bad things happen to us when we are alone. When we are alone, we are vulnerable, and that's when we can be harmed. And when we are together with other people, when we are with our people, when we gather together, that's when we are strong. So I'm not going to give you all the examples he brings, but that's part of the sort of larger story that the Netivot Shalom wants to tell, is there's strength in coming together, and it's when we are alone that we're wounded. But I do want to spend some time really digging into this text from the Netivot Shalom, so you have it in front of you, and we'll see. This is really the name of this session is the power and impossibility of unity. And this is where the Netivot Shalom is really the one who's speaking to the power of unity. So here we go. He says, the anu lomdim mizeh, we learn from this, meaning this midrash that we just learned together, shekol ha-matzavim ha-kashim ba'u rak be'et heyotam yichidim, that all the most difficult circumstances, they come upon us only when we are alone, when we're on our own. The ilu kashir ayu melchadim yachad, but when they're joined together, when we're united, hayalehem akoach litgaber al hakol, then there is the power to overcome anything. And he says, this is what's brought in this other earlier Slonimar work, the Yesod Avodah. He says on the verse, hine matov umanaim, shevet achim gam yachad, how good and pleasant when brothers dwell together. If you'll just allow me, I have to say, my grandma, who is 100 and still alive and well living in Westchester, this is her favorite song, Hine Ma Tovu Manayim Shevet. And she sang it. My wife and I got married at Hadar, not in this building, and my grandma sang it under the chuppah. So I always think of my grandma when I think of Hine Ma Tovu Manayim. And she was obviously thinking of this Netivot Shalom. So he brings this work from an earlier Slonimar work. This is the meaning of this verse. How good is it? How pleasant it is when brothers dwell together? And he says, umefaresh. This is what it means. Shevet achim, sort of brothers that are dwelling together. Shevet achim, shehem kshorim yachda ve'ahuvim ke'achim, that they're connected together and they love each other like brothers. She'az yitpardu mehem kol pa'alei aven. Then all of the forces of evil, they sort of disperse, they separate. Ki ha'yachid le'atzmo hu kener yachid. The person on their own, they're like a lone candle. She'hu or katan hanichbe benakel. It's a little light that's easily extinguished. Ve'kach al yachid yocholim lishlot kochot hasitra acha. And so it's easy on an individual person, on an individual candle, for the sort of the forces of the dark side to overpower them, to take control. Aval b'shevet achim ba'ava ve'achdut, but brothers that are dwelling together in love and in unity, as kol ha'nerot, all of their candles, because there's this another verse, ner Hashem nishmat adam, the candle of God is the soul of a person. This verse is often brought to compare the soul of a person is like a candle, that all of us, each of us, are likened to a candle. When we're all dwelling together, all of our candles, mitzterfim le'or echad b'chinat avuka, all of our individual little candles that on their own, they're so easy to extinguish, they become like this flaming torch. That in the light of that torch, all of the forces of evil, they disperse. That these negative forces, they flee. They're canceled out, all these negative forces, because they are from Alma de Pruda. They're from the world of separation. I think there's something so interesting about that phrase, that the forces that are acting against us, the forces that are bringing darkness into the world, they are from Alma de Pruda. They are from the world of the separation. But when we are together, when our individual candles all join together, then we form this torch that the light can sort of push off any darkness. We'll just do one more paragraph. He says, V'zohi ha'etza li'yehudi. This is the advice for a Jew. Gam b'hiyotov b'matzavim ha'guru'im b'yoter. Even when they are in the most difficult circumstances, whether it's spiritual, they're feeling spiritually that they're feeling cut off and disconnected from God, whether they're in some sort of physical suffering, the advice is שיתאחד ויתקשר יחד עם היהודים, that they need to unite and they need to connect themselves to other Jews. שאז הרי זה כאבוקה אשר ממנה יתפרדו כל פעלי אבן. Because then it is like the torch, that in the face of this light, all of the negative forces, all of those forces that are acting against us, they disperse. There's several things that I really like about this Netivot Shalom. The first is, I think, especially, I don't know if you, Hanukkah still feels relatively recent in my mind, if any of you were lighting your Chanukiyot, and how easy it is, you light the same candle over and over and over, and it keeps blowing out, that the incredible fragility of lighting a candle, this is really capturing this, is saying, each of us, when we're on our own, we're just like this candle. It's so hard even to get that candle lit, but the image of when we join together, then our individual candles are like this flaming torch, and nothing can hurt us, the strength in that. The other thing I love about this is he's just so clear, the Netivot Shalom, and this is consistent in a lot of his writings, that he says, the Zoyaitza, this is what you should do, right? You're struggling, you're suffering physically, spiritually, emotionally, you just got to get with other people. Okay, in all fairness, he's saying, let's be clear, he's saying you have to get yourself with other Jews. I would perhaps expand it more expansively and say, you have to connect with other people. You have to surround yourself with people. That's going to be the thing that when we come together, there is power. And I would say, for me, I've been gravitating towards this text for the last year or so in a moment in which our society is just so rife with so many divisions, whether we're talking internally in Israeli society, we're talking in our American political society, we're talking in our Jewish communities, we're talking within our own families. There's so much division, and I feel like there is a call in this text, a call in the Netivot Shalom to say, the thing that we have to do is we just have to all come together. When you all come together, then we can overcome anything, right? We can bring all of our lights together. It's when we're separate, that's when we can be wounded. The Netivot Shalom, he's the power, and I would say he's the promise of what can happen when we unite. And at the same time, I have questions about this, right? There was a part of me that when I first came across this text, I wanted to give a lecture that's like, just the Netivot Shalom, how amazing it is we all come together, and then we're done, we walk out of this room, we're feeling good and uplifted. There's something that feels really impossible about this, right? It's nice sounding, but what does it mean for us all to come together? Is that really possible? And I would say, even before we go into that, which we will in a minute, there's a couple of things, a couple kind of, for me, that feel like cracks already in the Midrash and in the Netivot Shalom that already caused me to kind of question the promise of the power of unity here. So if we just think of that, for one is the whole Midrash rests on this reading of this verse from Isaiah, right? If you remember, in your crying out, your gatherings will save you. And we said that that Midrash is a total rereading of what the verse in context in Isaiah means. That's not which, okay, fair enough, that happens sometimes. But that verse in Isaiah is about the things you gather, your idols will not save you. And the Midrash totally rereads that verse to be saying, oh, no, we're talking about people. And we're saying, when you cry out, those people, those gatherings will save you, right? That the Midrash is relying on this kind of radical rereading on the verse from Isaiah. Another thing that I would just say is a crack in the story that this Midrash and that the Netivot Shalom are trying to tell is that the story of the Midrash really relies on that story of Jacob reuniting with Esav. The Midrash wants to tell it as a story of Jacob gathering together his people. But if we look closely at the language of the Torah, it's actually not a story about gathering together people at all. It's actually a story about dividing people. So the verse there is actually looking up, Jacob saw Esav coming with 400 people. And what does he do? Here's the language. Ve'yachat et ha'yeladim. He divides up the kids, al Leah, the al Rachel, al Shtei Ashfachot. He divides up the kids, Leah and with Rachel and with the two maids. It doesn't use the language of he gathers up, he pulls it together. People are, the language, and actually there's another verse that comes right after this. It actually uses the word vayachat. He divides up twice in the span of several verses. So the Midrash was almost hard for me to sort of teach the Midrash, because the Midrash so wants to tell that as a story of coming together. But that's really against what the Torah is saying is happening. The Torah is saying what he did is he divided up his people. I just would say the last thing that I think is another crack in the Midrash, and perhaps a crack in the Netivot Shalom, is that the Midrash is so invested in telling the story of Jacob coming together with his children, and this is what saves Jacob from Esav, that it's willing to sort of look aside from the fact that it does that at the cost of the coming together in Jacob and Esau, right? That it's like, in order to tell the story of Jacob is coming together with his children, it has to keep Esau separate, which is not what happens in the Torah. Really, what happens, that's a story. If anyone's coming together in the story, it's not Jacob and his children who Jacob is dividing, it's Jacob and Esau. But the Midrash is not interested in Jacob and Esau coming together, because really the narrative that it's interested in is we're saving Jacob from Esau by gathering together with these children. Okay, so there's just, on the one hand, what I want to say is, I read the Midrash and I read the Netivot Shalom, and it is, to me, so powerful and moving to think about the power we gain when we all come together. But for me, I feel on sort of like, you just have to read a little bit closely to see that the Midrash is working very hard to tell this narrative of achdut, of unity, that there's, that, you know, that it has to read things in a certain way in order to get that across. So this leaves me with a couple of questions. The Netivot Shalom, Rabbi Shalom Noach Bar Zaksky, he has a very clear sense of Klal Yisrael, a commitment to all of the community of Israel, to this thing that unites all of us as a Jewish people. And I wonder for all of us today, when we say Klal Yisrael, who are we including in the Klal? Who is in our Klal Yisrael when we are talking about aspiring towards unity? I'll just share for me, part of why I ask that question is I would say I'm kind of more where Tali is, that I feel like I have a deep ambivalence with respect to the idea of Klal Yisrael. I definitely am someone, like I'm sure many of you, I see someone I don't know with a kippah or someone who looks recognizably Jewish, and I want to be like, it's me. We're in the same tribe. I'm over here, right? Like I see people davening at the airport and they're a minion, and I'm like, I'm, you know, like I care about that stuff too. I feel this desire to want to connect over Jewishness and feel that we're part of the same tribe in the same community. And it also, it feels very real to me as a woman, as someone who is queer and married to women, as someone who is committed to a certain kind of halachic egalitarianism, Judaism, I'm well aware, as Tali was saying, that there are many communities that I might want to consider part of my Klal Yisrael, but that they might not consider me part of their community. And it just leaves me with a question, what does it mean to want to attempt to consider all the Jewish people to be part of this same community when within that same community, they're not conceiving of me in that same way. So it's an open question for me. If we go back to the Netivot Shalom, who I think has a lot more clarity on Klal Yisrael and the importance of community, there's several questions that I want to ask that are going to take us going forward. The first is, when we talk about achdut, when we talk about unity, what do we mean when we envision this kind of unity? And is it possible? The second is, assuming it is possible, there is some way in which somehow all of the Jewish people could come together in some way. I want to know, what's the cost? What do we sacrifice for the sake of achdut? What do we sacrifice for the sake of unity? And is it actually desirable? And the third thing is, going back to our opening text from Bereishit and the Ma'anah Shel Torah, is it possible that we could live in a world in which there is both separation and division, and we could say about it that it's tov, that it's good? If we want to talk about unity, we want to look for examples of unity in the Torah, you really can't talk about achdut without looking at the story of Migdal Babel, the Tower of Babel, that happened so early in the book of Bereishit. This is a story in which, I'll remind you, the people decide they want to get together, they want to build this tower that's going to reach up to the heavens, they're going to make a name for themselves, they don't want to be scattered, right? They want to be united together, they're working united together. The Torah tells us, Vayichol ha'aret safa echat udvarim achadim. Everyone on the earth, they had the same language and the same words. And yet, as we remember from the end of the story, for a story that's all about achdut and unity, God doesn't seem to like it very much. God responds by saying, if it's one people with one language for all, this is how they've begun to act, then nothing that they propose to do will be out of reach. Let us then go down and confound their speech so that they should not understand one another's speech. Vayafet Hashem otam isham al panei kol ha'aretz, v'yichdelu libnot ha'ir. That God scatters them from there over all the face of the land, and they cease to build the city. They cease to build the tower. This is a story that is all about achdut. They have figured it out. One language, one people, and yet God doesn't want it. God scatters them. How are we supposed to understand this story? So Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, the Ha'amek Devar, he's a 19th century thinker, he has a very specific interpretation of just what went wrong with the building of the tower, and why was the result of it such that God said, no, no, I don't want this kind of unity. I don't want you acting in this way. So you should have this source on your source sheet. He says about the Pasuk, one of the verses says, V'naseh lanu shem, let's build it. We're going to build the tower. We're going to reach up to the heavens to make a name for ourselves. He says about this, Anashim mashkichim umemunim al hadavar. People were set to watch. They were appointed on this particular matter. Vayisareit sava la'anish et ha'over. And the officers of the sort of the army, they were there to punish anyone who transgressed. Dibelo ze eino mo'il hamigdal. Because if it wasn't for that, if that wasn't the function of the tower, then what would the tower be doing? Kol zot haya l'chashash. All this was out of suspicion. Meaning, why do you build a tower? You build a tower to be a watchtower, so that someone can climb up in the tower and be looking out on all the people to make sure that everyone is acting the right way and doing the right thing. And if anyone steps out of line, then he says, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, he says there are people that it's their job to look out, make sure everyone is behaving correctly, and then if not, they can punish those people that step out of line. He goes on and he says on the line, Pen nafutz al pene kol ha'aretz, that they're afraid of being scattered over the face of all of the earth. He says, Umnam yesh lehavin ma chasheshu bim yetzu kama le'aretz acheret. We have to try to understand, what were they so afraid of that some people would leave and go to a different land? Why were they so focused on, let's not be scattered? What's the big deal? Some people decide to move. Okay, let them move. He says, "Umuvan shezeh yashalach ledvarim achedim sheyabenehem." This must have been connected to the idea that there were things that were of one between them. That they were, there was one language. It was one matter. Ubasher ein daot bnei adam shavim, because no two people think the same way. The thoughts of one person are not like the other. Chasheshu shelo yitzu bnei adam de'azo. They were concerned that people, they know that people don't think alike. They know people are different, but they want everyone to think the same way. And so they're concerned that people are going to stop thinking the one way and start thinking the other way. And for that reason, they were watching out and making sure that no one left their place. According to Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, what's going on in the story is the people get together and build a tower to protect the Dvarim Achedim, to protect the fact that they are all supposed to be of one mind and united. But they know that that's not what the world is like. They know that we're not all thinking the same thing. And so there's real concern, because they know the natural human inclination is going to be, I'm going to start thinking my thing and you're going to start thinking your thing. And then what's going to happen? We're not going to be of one mind anymore, of one place. We're going to all be scattered. And so that's why they build the tower. Taken that way, we then understand God's scattering at the end of the story. It's not that God is punishing them for doing a bad thing. It's God responding and saying, that's not the world I want. I don't want a world in which you're all speaking the same language, in which you're all of one mind. I don't want that world. I want a world in which you're all thinking different things, in which you're all speaking different languages, in which you're all allowed to live in the places in which you want to be. We learn from the story of Migdal Babel, the Tower of Babel, we learn what achdut is not. We learn what unity is not supposed to be. Unity does not mean conformity. Unity does not mean that we all have to be of one mind, of one language, in one place. We tried that with Migdal Babel, and God didn't like it. And so then the question is, if Migdal Babel, if the Tower of Babel is teaching us what achdut is not, what unity is not, where might we look for examples of what achdut is, what unity is supposed to be like? Where might we look for examples, something that is more nuanced, a type of achdut that can allow for unity, but also allow for difference, an achdut that could allow for separation and also allow for togetherness. And so here going forward, I want to propose three models that we might find in achdut, a unity that is perhaps more nuanced than what we saw in Migdal Babel. So the first is if we go back to our brothers. We're going to just keep bringing it back to the brothers. If we go back to the story of Yaakov and Esau, so you'll remember in the story that really what that story is about is that Jacob and Esau successfully get back together and they reunite. The Torah tells in this very emotional way, Vayaratz Esau likrato v'chabkehu v'yipola tzavarav v'shakehu v'yivku, that Esau runs towards him and embraces him and falls on his neck. He kisses him and they weep. That after all of this betrayal, after all of the fear, after Jacob, you know, being concerned, what is the reunion going to be like, whatever preparations, he's separating his children, he's gathering together his children, however you understand the story, ultimately Esav and Yaakov find a way back together. They reunite. And yet what happens right after that episode? Esav says, let's walk together. I'll go with you. I'm going to go at your pace. And Yaakov says, oh no, I've got all these kids. It's going to take me a while. You go on. I'll catch up. What happens? Esav goes on to Seir, Esav lidarko Seira, and Jacob, he continues on a very interesting journey, not to Seir. Jacob goes to Sukkot, he goes to Shechem, he goes to Beit El, ultimately gets to this place called Migdal Eder, but he doesn't go back to Esav, right? And yet, they go their separate ways, but what happens when Yitzchak dies? The Torah tells us when Yitzchak dies, he was gathered to his kin in his ripe old age. Vayikberu oto Esav v'Yaakov banav. Jacob and Esav come back together to bury their father. This is a story. These brothers start out together. There is this thing that tears them apart. There's a lot of concern. Are they going to be able to come back together? They actually manage to find their way back together, and they choose not to stay together. They choose to separate. And yet in their separation, they're not totally cut off from each other, that they're able to find their way back together to bury Yitzchak. What might we take away from this? We're going to call this model one, the Yitzchak and Esav model. What do we take away from this? I think the one is that achdut, being together, might not actually require us to be together all the time, that sometimes some relationships require distance. Some relationships require separation. And even though Yaakov and Esav were able to reconcile in some way, ultimately what was needed for their relationship was to have some space. And yet at the same time, even when we may find that what we need is to take space in relationships or to separate from certain people, that doesn't mean that they're like gone to us forever. Somehow Yaakov and Esav managed to stay in relationship such that they're able to come together when there's a moment when they are pulled back together. That's model one. Model two, this you should have in your source sheet. So the Talmud offers us another model of, I would say, a more nuanced model of achdut, more nuanced model of unity. So there's a question in the Talmud, in Masechet Yevamot, of can we have multiple, what happens when different courts disagree with each other? And can we have multiple courts with differing opinions in the same city? So something that's important to understand before we get into this Gemara, before we get into this Talmud, is there's a verse from Devarim that says, lo tidgoredu, it's in that context, it's talking about mourning rituals when someone dies, and we're not supposed to, lo tid goredu, you're not supposed to literally cut yourself. You're not supposed to make gashes in your flesh, which is something that the other nations were doing. We're going to mourn in our own way. Lo tid goredu, don't cut yourself. This verse is kind of famously read more metaphorically, not just as don't make gashes in your flesh as a mourning ritual, but don't cut yourself, meaning don't cut yourself off from each other. Lo tit goredu, it's taken out of its mourning ritual context and read as don't cut yourself off from other people. Okay, so here's the context. So, and just one more word of introduction. There's a question about Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, two very famous schools of thought that oftentimes would disagree with each other, that over a particular practice, they were ruling in different ways. And it seems Beit Shammai were following their own practice and not following Beit Hillel. And the Gemara has a question and says, how could they be doing that? Right? I think implicit in that is like, aren't we all supposed to be doing the same thing? Shouldn't there be one ruling that we all get behind and we're all united? Okay, so that's a question. Umanta Marasu, for the one that said that Beit Shammai were doing their own thing, they were following their own ruling, Karenam Khan lo tid goredu, lo ta'asu agudot agudot. We should say about this, how could Beit Shammai be doing their own thing? We say about this verse from Dvarim, don't cut yourself off. That's not exactly what the verse is saying. It's saying don't make gashes in yourself. That's don't cut yourself off, meaning metaphorically, don't make yourself into these smaller agudot, these smaller cut-off communities. So how could Beit Shammai be doing that? Amar Abaye, ki amrinan lo tid goredu. Abaye says, when we said lo tid goredu, don't cut yourself off, kigon shtei betei dinim be'irchat, that we were talking about, you would have two different courts in the same city. That would be an example of like cutting yourself off, severing one from the other. Halal morim kedivrei Beit Shammai v'halal morim kedivrei Beit Hillel. This court is following Beit Hillel and this court is following Beit Shammai, and it's happening in the same city. That would be a problem. That would be lo tit goredu. Aval shtei betei dinim b'shtei ayarot leit lanba. But if you have two courts and they're in two separate cities, that's not a violation of lo tit goredu. That's okay. We can tolerate difference of opinion as long as it's not in the same city, right? Your court's doing your thing over there, and you're over there. That's what must have been going on with Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Not a problem. But Rava says, V'ha Beit Shammai v'Beit Hillel k'shtei batei dinim be'irachat dame. Rava's like, wait a minute, you can't fool me. Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is not like two different courts in two different cities. It was like Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai's opinions were everywhere. It was like, it was more equivalent to, it was two different courts in the same city, which seems like it should be a violation of lo tit goredu, don't cut yourself off. And so therefore, how could Beit Shammai be doing their own thing, separating from the community? Elamar Rava, rather Rava says, ki amrinan lo tit goredu, Rava says, here's the answer. When we say don't cut yourself off, kigon beit din ba'ir echat, we're talking about one Beit Din, one court in the same city, and within that court, the court is divided. That half of the court wants to rule like Beit Shammai, and half the court is ruling Beit Hillel. But if you have two separate courts in the same city, and they're ruling differently, that's not a problem. Okay, so the bottom line resolution is, so just to say, What do we understand from this story? A few things. One is, the Talmud does not have a problem with machloket and differences of opinion, right? The whole structure of the Talmud is built on machloket and differences of opinion. Of course we don't have to think the same thing. Of course we can disagree with each other. That's the whole culture of Jewish thought. That's not the problem. We can handle multiple batei din, multiple courts, certainly in separate cities, and even in the same city we could have different courts that are ruling the same thing. That's not an issue. What's an issue is when you try to hold us all together in one court, and within one court, you have this kind of severing, this kind of division. That's what we're concerned about. And so I'd say perhaps one possible takeaway is, actually, A, we could handle sort of a marketplace of opinions and difference of opinions, and it's even important to have that. Don't force us all to be into one court. It's okay to, in one city, have this court thinking one way and this court thinking another way, that we have to allow a plurality of ways of thinking. It's when you force us to all be in the same court, that's when we're in violation of lo tit goredu. Don't cut yourself off. I want to offer one final model. This is a model that's going to come from Rabbi Nachman, a 19th century Hasidic thinker. Rabbi Nachman is going to argue that machloket, disagreement, is not only sort of like permitted or okay, but that actually it's necessary for the creation of the world, which, just to take you back to the beginning, you'll remember, you know, God dividing the waters. The Ma'anash al Torah says this is the division of the waters, was God first introducing machloket into the world, which was necessary for the creation of the world. So in a sense, Rabbi Nachman is going to take us back to the opening. So he says, the kasher asa Hashem yitzbarach livroat ha'olam, when the Holy Blessed One wanted to create the world, lo haya makom livar'o, there was no place to create it. Machmacha yakol ein sof, because all of the world was filled with ein sof, which is to say, all the world was filled with the infinite. There was no space. Al ken tzimtzem et ha'or v'tzadim, and so God contracted the light to the sides. The ayadei atimtzum hazeh na'asa chalal ha'panui, and because God contracted the light to the sides, it created this vacated chalal, the space in between. Uvetoch ha'chalal ha'panui hazeh, in this vacated space, all of time and all of space was able to come into existence. Shehem briyat olam, that this is the creation of the world. And this vacated space that God had to create, contracting the light to the sides, it was necessary for the creation of the world. Because if there was not this halal, there wouldn't have been any space for the world. Which is to say, imagine, Rabbi Nachman is imagining, when God took to creating the world, God's presence filled the entire world. There was no, it was kind of like the water at creation. The water was everywhere. It was all water. God's presence filled the entire world. There was no space for a world to be created. God had to contract the light to the sides. And by contracting to the two sides, that created this vacated space, that in that space, the world could exist. So Rabbi Nachman says, v'chenu bechinat ha-machlokot. And this is also true when it comes to machlokot, when it comes to disagreements. Ki ilu hayu kol ha-talmidei chachamim echad, if all the Torah scholars were one, lo haya makom levriyat ha-olam, there would be no place for the creation of the world. Rak al yadei ha-machloket shebineihem, it's only through the machloket, the differences, the arguments that are between them, v'heim nichlakim ze mizeh, that they are dividing one from each other, v'kol echad moshech atzmo letzad ocher, everyone is pulling themselves to a different side, al yadei ze naseh bineihem b'chinot chalal penui. All the Torah, if all the Talmidei Chachamim, if all the Torah scholars thought the same thing, if they were one, there would just be this mass of uniformed opinion. There would be no space for the creation of the world. But it's because they disagree, this one is pulling to their side, and this one is pulling to their side, it creates this opportunity in the middle. And in that opportunity, so he goes on and says, she says, Shehu bechinut tzimtzuma or letzadim, this is like the light contracting to the sides. Shebo bibriyat olam ayadea dibor, and this is allows for the creation of the world through speech. We'll just read one more line together. He says, Ki kol ha-dvarim shekol echad mehem medaber, all of the words that each one says, hakol hem rak bishvil bri'at ha'olam. All of their words, all of their speech, all of their disagreements, it's for the sake of creating the world. So he takes the sort of the metaphor, the image of when God took to creating the world, God had to contract the light to the sides to allow the possibility of something else to exist. And he says, this is like Torah scholars, which of course let's extend it to people, right? This is like us. This is like people. If all of us were just this one, conglomerated mass in the middle, there would be no space. There's no potential for something else to exist. But when this one pulls to the one side, and this one pulls to one side, it creates an opportunity here that we're able to create something new. We're able to create the world. And he says this last line, I think, is really important. And all of their words, all of their speech, all of their disagreements was for the purpose of creating the world. So a couple of things here. One is, just like we saw in the Torah, machloket, division, separation, is necessary for the creation of the world, right? If we don't pull to each of our own sides and create some sort of halal, some sort of space in the middle, there's no space for the world to exist. And yet, I would say in this text, the way that I sort of visualize it is it feels like even as the Torah scholars are pulling to their sides, They're not like flinging off into outer space. It feels like they're staying in some sort of relationship with each other, almost like there's this like magnetic pull that's keeping them both apart, but also in relationship, right? Even as we pull to our side, we see that we're part of the same project. We're still in relationship. And we can see that because in all the words that we speak, we're speaking our words for the sake of creating something together. Even as we disagree, we're disagreeing for the purpose of creation. In the beginning, both of the Torah and of this lecture, we started with the story of creation. Vayevdel ben hamayim asher mitachad lerakia uven hamayim asher me'al lerakia. That God separates the waters that was below the expanse from the waters that was above the expanse. And we said that the Mayan HaShel Torah, he notes that it doesn't say vayar Elohim ki tov, that God doesn't see it as good. And he asks, why doesn't God see it as good? And he says, because this is the first introduction of machloket, of separation into the world. And we see that the separation of the waters, the separation of the light to the sides, the separation of the Torah scholars, all of this is a necessary part of creation. Without this machloket, without this division, there would be no space for the world. And yet, there's a tension, because it's not a siman tov, it's not good, right? There's something painful about this separation. So where does it leave us? We have this aspirational vision of the Netivot Shalom, who speaks of the power of achdut, the power of unity, that we can overcome anything together, and the reality that separation is a necessary part of creation. We tried an all-encompassing unity with Migdal Bavel, with the Tower of Babel, and that project failed. The waters of creation cannot be joined back together once they've been separated. And so given that, we need to lean into Rabbi Nachman's sort of vision of machloket, that even as we pull to the sides, we have to see ourselves still as being in relationship to each other. Even when Esav and Yaakov separated from each other, they were still tethered together somehow. They were able to come back together. They knew what was going on. I want to end with an excerpt from a poem by a poet, Marge Piercy. She says, alone, you can fight. You can refuse. You can take what revenge you can. But they roll over you. But two people fighting back to back can cut through a mob. A snake dancing file can break a cordon. An army can meet an army. Two people can keep each other sane, can give support, conviction. Three people are a delegation, a committee, a wedge. With four, you can play bridge and start an organization. With six, you can rent a whole house, eat pie for dinner with no seconds, and hold a fundraising party. A dozen make a demonstration. 100 fill a hall. 1,000 have solidarity and your own newsletter. 10,000 power and your own paper. 100,000 your own media. 10 million your own country. It goes on one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again after they said no. It starts when you say we and know who you mean. And each day, you mean one more. Part of what I struggle with the phrase Klal Yisrael, even as I try to connect to it, is it's so abstract. I don't know what it means. When I say Klal Yisrael, who do I mean? And do they mean me? Who is in the Klal? And I feel like this last line of the poem, it starts when you say we and know who you mean, and each day you mean one more. This is the beginning of the answer to my question about Klal Yisrael. How am I going to get to a connection, a relationship with Klal Yisrael? It starts when I know who I'm talking about, right? That we can't just be saying it out in the abstract, right, Klal Yisrael. We have to start like actually thinking, who are the people? Who are the people that are in my Klal? Who are the people that are in my community? And once you can figure that out and name it, it's not a static thing, that it just stays like that. It starts when just each day, when you think of that Klal Yisrael that you are part of, each day, can you add one more person to it? Can you just add one more? As we close, I want to offer us this dual blessing, I suppose. I want to offer us that we continue to strive towards the achdut, the unity of the Netivot Shalom. I don't want to give up on that. I'm committed to the beauty and to the power of this vision of all of our flames coming together, and that when we are together, we can't be extinguished. When we strive toward this Achdut, may we do so thinking of Marge Piercy, of this poem, may we say we and know who we mean, and each day add one more. And yet, we have to recognize that separation is part of the very fabric of creation. We saw that the very beginning of creation is God separating things one from another. And so even as we separate, as we argue, as we divide one from another, may we do so thinking of Rabbi Nachman. As we pull to our sides, may we remember that we are still in relationship to each other, we are still a part of the same project, and we are still connected and tethered together in some way.